This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Now, I'm finding at the moment things on Earth can be a little bit boring. And this week, I mean, I've not left the planet at all. So I think it's time to do something about that, don't you? Welcome along. This is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name's Dan. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. This is the quick spin around the galaxy. It's the show that uncovers all the secrets of the universe. Now, this week, we'll learn about new homes that have been made from human waste. I mean, you know it's going to be a good show when the first thing on the menu is poo, right? Also, we'll talk about waves in the sea and how they form and what use they are. And we'll learn about a brutal beast that I simply cannot believe isn't on our Dangerous Dan list. I mean, I've checked. I've checked it once, I've checked it twice, and it's definitely not nice, and it's not on the list, so we'll correct that in a bit. First, let's catch up with the smartest genius we've got at Fun Kids HQ. This is Professor Hallux.
Hallux's Hydration Help Desk. Call accepted.
Hello, Professor. My mum's always telling me to drink some more water. What happens if I don't?
Gosh, that's a very important question to answer. Let's start by reminding ourselves about two important words. Hydration and dehydration are words which describe how much water things have or don't have. Hydrated?
And if you haven't had enough water to drink, we say that you are dehydrated.
Thanks, Nanobot. Now, one thing's certain, humans need to be well hydrated to live. You can only survive a few days without a drink. And long before then, your body will start to be affected. You lose water all the time, when you go to the loo and when you sweat.
And remember, you sweat more in hot places and when you're exercising hard.
Good point. An obvious sign that you're dehydrated is that you feel thirsty. Everyone recognises that feeling, and usually that's when you'll seek out a drink, right? But way before then, as your body begins to run low on water, you might be aware of other symptoms. When you're mildly dehydrated, it gets more difficult to concentrate. Your brain needs water to work properly, and when supplies are running low, it's quickly affected and your mind can wander. Headaches are another way of telling that you need more water. If you feel a headache starting, it's always worth having a big glass of water. You might find that it helps. If you're unlucky and are dehydrated for a long time, you'll notice that your wee gets darker. That's because there isn't as much water as usual diluting the waste. Got any facts in your data banks for us, Nanobot?
Of course. I am a well of watery wonderment. The longest any human has gone without a drink of water is 18 days. A man in Austria was left in a police cell by accident and they forgot he was there. He was only discovered after all that time.
Gosh, what a lucky escape. There's no excuse for us to forget to drink water. Scientists think that most children don't drink enough, which is crazy given the number of taps in every house and bottles of water in lots of shops. So make sure you include water with every meal, especially at breakfast time, so that your brain's ready to start work when you are. Next on the help desk, we'll be finding out about how much water you should be drinking each day. See you then.
Hallux's Hydration Help Desk, with support from the Children's Health Fund. Find out more at funkidslive.com/hallux.
If you've got any science question in your brain that you need answered, maybe it's something that's just popped in there in the last few days and it's keeping you up at night, something sciencey that's making you think, If it's really confusing you, let me know. Leave it as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on Apple Podcasts. I will see it and I'll find the answer for you. This is from Lucy in Birmingham, who says, why can animals' blood sometimes be blue? Oh, come on. Lucy, listen up. We've talked about this a few weeks ago. We did this in this very show. It's all to do with the protein that's in the blood and what it does. And some animals' blood aren't just blue. You get green blood. Ours is red. There's all the colours in the spectrum you can find blood. And it's all to do with the protein that's in there. What I suggest for you, Lucy, is to skim through the episodes of the show for the last few months and you'll find the answer in more detail. Also, hello to Summer1234, who asks, what's the most venomous bug ever? Well, Summer, it's the harvester ant. which isn't something glamorous. You know, it's not like one of these really evil bugs that you find in the rainforest. The harvester ant is mostly found in the southern states of America. It causes great harm to humans. It will surge you with a lot of pain. It won't kill you necessarily straight away, but the venom is so toxic that just three bites from this ant could be fatal to another smaller creature. That's why the harvester is the most venomous bug ever. And finally, hello to Mapple V2. Mapple V2 asks, why does the sea have waves? Now, waves is caused mainly by wind. As great gusts blow across the ocean, it causes friction on the top of the sea. That moves it around. That's what causes the waves. Now, tide, which is mainly what causes the ebb and the flow of the water onto a beach, that's caused by the gravity of the moon pulling the water around the Earth. So as that travels around us, as that orbits the planet, it will move the water all around. That's why you get the ebb and the flow of the tide, and that also causes waves. Thank you so much for the reviews and the questions. If you've got something sciencey niggling around your brain, if you want it answered, let me know. Leave it as a review on Apple Podcasts for the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, a mystery 20 years old has finally been solved, as scientists are finally starting to understand which dinosaur the bones that they dug up like 2 decades ago actually belong to, and it's something brand new. Now, Professor Roger Benson is a professor of paleobiology from the University of Oxford, and he's on the line to tell us more. Hey, Roger.
Hi.
So, very quickly, how did these scientists who dug up these bones know straight away that this was a brand new dinosaur?
Well, one of the interesting things is this dinosaur comes from rocks in North America that haven't historically had many dinosaur discoveries. So, in fact, most of what's found there, it's very exciting, most of what's found there is new. So they found these bones, they would have immediately known they were the bones of a small predatory dinosaur from a time and a place where we didn't know much about the dinosaurs. So I think they would have realised almost straight away.
Well, very quickly, why do we not find many fossils in this part of the world? Do we think that maybe back in the day, you know, 100 million years ago, that it was inhospitable for dinosaurs? Is that what we thought?
It's more likely there just aren't that many rocks of that age, and that paleontologists didn't spend a lot of time searching them for dinosaurs. Especially in North America, there's so many dinosaur fossils, but they mainly come from a few different rock deposits that are really rich in bones. So it's taken people longer to get to some of these less rich sites, but it's probably more to do with the circumstances that allow the bones to be fossilized. It's quite likely most places on Earth around the right times had living dinosaurs. It's just that their bones weren't always buried and fossilized.
Now, how many dinosaurs do we know absolutely for sure existed and we have evidence for?
Yeah, so we have the bones of nearly 1,500 dinosaur species today that are known to science. But that's probably a fraction of whatever existed. So sometimes people have tried to estimate just at any one time in the evolution of dinosaurs, how many species would there be on Earth? And the answer is about 1,000. So through the 170 million years or so that they were around on Earth, there would have been tens of thousands of species probably, and we've only just discovered a few of them.
If I found a dinosaur bone out digging one day, is there somewhere that I could go to check whether we know that this dinosaur already exists?
Yeah, so a lot of museums offer a service where people can bring their fossils and someone who really knows in the museum will take a look at it. And the first thing they'll tell you is whether it's a fossil bone or not and whether it's likely to belong to a dinosaur if it is. And then if they're really interesting, those people will consult experts in other places like me. And they should be able to tell you how much you can know from what you discovered.
So 20 years ago, scientists found these bones that were dug up in a part of the world they never normally find bones. They think, right, this is a new dinosaur. Roger, then what do they do? If you've got no real understanding of what dinosaur this is meant to be, how do you go about almost inventing what it is going to be, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so the first thing that you find when you're looking for dinosaurs in the field is you find bones, and the bones are sticking out of rocks. And most of the time, those rocks are hard. So what that means is this dinosaur is a bit smaller than an adult human. So that's about the size of the skeleton. And it would have taken them a few weeks or months just to excavate it out of the ground. And at that point, what they would have is a lot of blocks of rock that contain bones. So the first thing they have to do is a long, difficult process of removing the bones from the rock. And this is hard rock off of fragile fossil bones. So that would have taken a long time, and that would be sort of very detailed, difficult work for someone.
And they think that this new dinosaur that they've discovered, it offers a glimpse into the evolution of, like, apex predators, the proper beasts, T-Rex and others. Talk to us a bit more about the new dinosaur and how they imagine that it would have been.
Yeah, so everyone's heard of Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is probably one of the most famous animals that ever lived of any sort, let alone dinosaurs. And Tyrannosaurus Rex is actually quite a strange dinosaur. So it's one of the biggest predators that ever lived. And it lived right at the end of the history of dinosaurs, shortly before they became extinct. And it belongs to a group that are called Tyrannosaurids. So Tyrannosaurus Rex and its relatives are called Tyrannosaurids. And they include things that you might have heard of too, like Tarbosaurus and Gorgosaurus. And their bones are actually very abundant towards the last 15 million years or so of dinosaur history in North America and in Asia. They're actually quite different to other predatory dinosaurs. So the other predators we know from the history of dinosaurs belong to completely different groups, and they're quite different when you look in detail at their skeleton. So for a long time, we didn't really know really where these big predators, the Tyrannosaurids, came from late in the history of dinosaurs, sort of at the last moment. And the new fossil, Susquehtyrannus, is one of these animals that's a bit older. It's a lot smaller than T-Rex. It's just a bit smaller than an adult human. But it's clearly a close relative or an ancestor of these sorts of animals. So it helps scientists to sort of piece together the picture of where animals like Tyrannosaurus rex actually came from in terms of their evolutionary history.
I'm looking at an illustrated picture of this online, what they think it looks like. And it seems to be bright, it's multicoloured almost, and it looks to be quite hairy. Is that just wild imagination, or is there some science behind that?
You'd say it's 50% imagination, 50% science. So when I was young, I read the dinosaur books, and they said we'll never know what colour dinosaurs were. One of the most amazing discoveries of the last decade or so was that actually we have some information about the colours of some dinosaurs. And what happens is sometimes some rock deposits are able to preserve not just the bones of the dead animals, but also parts of their skin. And it turns out that many dinosaurs were covered in a sort of fine covering of fur-like filaments and sometimes feathers. So it's sort of changed our view about what dinosaurs really looked like. So dinosaurs weren't, in general, scaly reptiles. In fact, they're sort of furry or feathery like birds or mammals.
Even T-Rexes or...
Yeah, so it's surprising. A sort of surprising, amazing thing is some of the close relatives of Tyrannosaurus rex we now know from direct fossil evidence that they have this cover of fur-like wow. feathery structures across their body. So they're not preserved in Susquehtyrannus, but they're preserved in some close relatives, and we can be fairly sure that they were present there too.
That's amazing. I suppose, thinking about humans for a second, we've pretty much evolved to be arguably the best that we could be. Is it the same before the asteroid hit the world and eliminated the dinosaurs that lived there? If you're talking about Tyrannosaur being the apex predator, almost the best dinosaur that could have existed, do you think that if the asteroid hadn't have hit, anything would have evolved to be better than the T-Rex, to be more of an apex predator?
Yeah, so, I mean, we sort of think evolution causes things to be better. And then the question is, what does that really mean? Like, is the best dinosaur the biggest predator? Are we the best animals because we're so smart, for example? It's a bit complicated. So every species is under pressure to be the best it can be for the job that it's doing in ecosystems. So Tyrannosaurus rex, as a giant predator, was probably under pressure to be the best giant predator that it could be. But all these other dinosaurs weren't worse than T-Rex. They were just doing different things, and they were under selective pressure to be different. If the dinosaurs didn't become extinct, what might have happened in their evolutionary history, and what sorts of giant predators might we see? I think these are really interesting questions, and we don't know the answer. One of the things that's quite clear to us is T-Rex is almost certainly the largest dinosaur predator that ever lived. I'd like to know, is it possible for dinosaurs to be even bigger, for predatory dinosaurs to be even bigger than that? And if not, why not? And what might have happened? We can't tell for sure.
I know that you're wildly speculating, so I won't push you too much more on this. Just very quickly, and I suppose we don't necessarily know what was running through a T-Rex's mind, but if they weren't extinct, do you think that dinosaurs would have gone through something of a cognitive revolution like we did, and would be able to gain thoughts and insights and a greater understanding of the world like humans?
Yeah, so one of the really exciting things we know is that they would be capable of it, and we know that because they did do it. Because do you know that today's birds are the descendants of dinosaurs? So T-Rex is a not-so-distant relative of birds. And at the end of the Cretaceous, all dinosaurs went extinct, except for birds. And birds include some of the smartest animals on Earth today. So birds like parrots and corvids, so these are crows and their relatives, are smart. Corvids can use tools. Parrots can mimic human speech. So we do see some really smart birds today, and those birds are dinosaurs. So I don't know if T-Rex would have become super smart, but we know that some of the relatives of T-Rex that live on Earth today are really smart.
Amazing. Roger Benson from the University of Oxford, thank you so much for joining us on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
So I was looking through our Dangerous Dan list the other day, and it's filled with all the sharks and the killer whales and the deadly poisons and all the bombs that we've talked about. And it struck me that one of my favourite brutal beasts, one of the most devastating creatures in the whole world, isn't even on it. Listen to this. Can you believe it? We've not talked about the grizzly bear. I think that needs to change right now. The grizzly bear is an American species of brown bear. You'll find it in Alaska and in Canada. Now, it's a powerful apex predator. It's top of the food chain. It mostly eats nuts and berries and roots and small rodents. Now, they're not necessarily aggressive or ferocious. Normally, they tend to be quite shy, keeping themselves to themselves. But if you step near one, if a human gets in the way of a mum and its cub, honestly, they take no prisoners. They're huge. They've got massive jutting teeth. They're fast as well. They can run up to 30 miles an hour. They've got gigantic claws that can scythe you down. You can't even hide up a tree. They're brilliant at climbing. And their jaws are so strong that a grizzly bear can crush a bowling ball in just a few bites. I mean, the grizzly. Come on, it might be a bit late to our Dangerous Dan list, but they leap straight to the top.
Hello there, I'm George, and I'm here to tell you all about the Fun Kids Download. It's a podcast you can get from wherever you get your podcasts. This week, I'm joined by animation royalty, not actual royalty, but the stars of How to Train Your Dragon 3, plus author Anne-Marie Howe, who's chatting about her brand new book. If you're lucky, you might even get a yes-no game. That is the Fun Kids Download. Get it from wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, let's take a trip to the smartest school outside of the solar system and get a lesson from Professor Pulsar at Deep Space High.
Deep Space High, spaceports.
Okay, everyone at Deep Space High, I'm ready to transmit my presentation on spaceports. You're gonna love it. Transmitting in 3, 2, 1. Now you've got to agree. Spaceports just sound, well, pretty cool. They make me think of a bustling futuristic place with astronauts and passengers getting their spacesuits on and loads of craft taking off. What's not to like? But it's not just cool. Spaceports will really help business and members of the public, like you and me, in lots of ways. Let me show you what I mean. For starters, spaceports will create jobs, lots of them, and not just astronauts. Although the plan is to try and use airfields that already exist, they'll need modifications and building work to make them suitable for space travel, from extending the runways to building vast hangars to maintain the spacecraft. That'll take a lot of people. Maybe someone you know. And once completed, they'll need people to run them smoothly, from air traffic control in the control tower to the chefs in the restaurants. And a spaceport would be a pretty lonely place without any spacecraft, right? And think about all the technology that will be needed. Rockets and space planes need motors, fuel tanks, high-tech materials that are tough enough for orbit, and computer technology to make it work together. They'll also need vehicles to transport special equipment around. And where you have a spaceport, there'll be more demand for such things, and that demand would make it easier for engineering companies to get inventing and improve the existing technology. Now, I'd love to work at a company that works with space technology, and if there are more of them around, that seems like a good thing to me. Some of that new technology might be in, say, developing hybrid air breathing and rocket engines for a new breed of single-stage-to-orbit space planes. That's something which is already under research and development. It's known as SABRE. Another way spaceports will help is in the delivery of small satellites into orbit. Currently, whatever their size, satellites are launched using large rockets. That's not cost-effective if your satellite is, say, the size of a sandwich box. So, if there was an easy and cheap way to launch it, that could be big business. And to make it cheaper to launch larger satellites, well, they could be taken into low orbit using a space plane, from where they could be launched further into space. A bit like in Star Trek, where smaller shuttles travel to larger ships already in orbit. And here's something that, if you're lucky, you might get to experience for yourself. Whilst you might have to wait a while for a trip to Jupiter, it's very likely that it'll be possible to use space planes to travel around the Earth more quickly. Say, a couple of hours to Australia, that's less time in the air before you can get to the beach. Or you could take a space flight experience, where you pay to travel right up to the edge of space to experience being weightless and having incredible views of the Earth below. And that weightlessness won't just be a fun experience, it can help with science research too. A scientist might have an experiment where the results could be affected by gravity or the substances used. If that experiment could be carried out without gravity affecting things, scientists may get more accurate results, say for a new medicine or material, something that could benefit us all. So, as you can see, there's a lot of reasons to get excited about spaceports. Uh-oh, losing the connection. Catch you next time.
Deep Space High. Spaceports. Support from the UK Space Agency. Find out more at funkidslive.com/space.
It's time to talk about this week's science in the news. A royal burial site found near a supermarket has been hailed as the UK's answer to Tutankhamun's tomb. It's found near Southend, which is over in Essex. It was first discovered back in 2003, so 16 years ago. But after extensive digging, they found ancient instruments, tooth fragments, and many more artifacts. And scientists are starting to think that it belongs to a 6th century Anglo-Saxon prince. Also, a Martian dust devil has hit NASA's InSight lander up on Mars. A Martian dust devil is a really fast gust of wind that picks up rock and debris and it forms almost this surging, moving wall. And the storms have the potential to end a mission. Now, briefly, NASA lost contact with the rover because its solar panels were covered in dust, but they're talking to it again. Don't worry, it is fine. It is working. It's still roving around Mars. And finally, have a listen to this, by the way. Finally, new homes and factories are being built from bricks that are made of human waste. Oh, I know. Imagine this. Dried sewage from Europe's largest treatment works is being recycled to build new homes in London. Homes made of poo. I mean, the place will quite literally be a dump. And that is it for this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. If you've got a sciencey question rattling around your brain, if it's keeping you up at night, maybe it's something that you heard at school the other day, one of your teachers acting all smart said this, and you thought, I don't think that's right, and I think I know the place to figure out if it is actually true. Well, that place is me. What you need to do is you need to get over to the Apple Podcast Store, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on there, and leave us a review. It's dead easy, takes just a few minutes. It will leave your name so I can say hello. Drop us 5 stars, that'll help me see it a lot easier because it pushes it right to the top. There's a little comment box at the bottom. When you're in there, that's when you need to write your science question. Now, when you're on Apple Podcasts, if that's how you listen to the shows, you can find all of our brilliant science series from Fun Kids on there. They're also on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. They're on the free Fun Kids app, and you can hear them at funkidslive.com as well. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK. Listen to us all over the country on your DAB digital radio on that free Fun Kids app, and as always at funkidslive.com. I will see you next time. Bye!
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.